we're doing a cosmic slump. Would you like to dance with me? We're doing a cosmic slump. Would you like to dance with me? We're doing a cosmic slump.
You are listening to Reparations in Action here on HuruRadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. Reparations in Action is the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee, the organization of white people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, organizing in the white community in solidarity with the struggle of African people for self-determination, national liberation, and reparations. And we'd like to begin by expressing our deepest appreciation to the African People's Socialist Party and Uhuru Radio for allowing us this hour every Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, here on UhuruRadio.com to extend the message of black power and white reparations to African people deep into the white oppressor nation population. This is Jesse Neville. I am a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee and the chair of our mass organization, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, filling in today for our usual host, Jamie Simpson. And I am joined in the studio today by comrades who are here from the West Coast. Let's begin with an introduction of our guests here. I'd like to introduce Comrade Maureen Wagoner, who is here from Oakland, California. Uhuru.
Uhuru, Jesse. I want to thank the African People's Socialist Party for creating Uhuru Radio and giving the Solidarity Committee the opportunity to have this radio show. And thank you, Jesse, for inviting us to be on the show today. We're honored to be here at the Cadre Development School of the African People's Socialist Party.
Uhuru, thank you for being on the show with us today, Comrade Maureen. And sitting next to me is Jackson from San Diego, California, who is the West Coast Regional Representative of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Uhuru, Comrade Jackson.
Uhuru, it's an honor to be here.
Uhuru. And on the other side of the table here, we are joined by our guest who was on the show with us last week, Comrade Star, also here from San Diego, California.
Uhuru, thanks for having me.
Also, shout out to our perennial engineer, Eric. Uhuru, Eric. Thank you for all of your excellent work on this show, and Uhuru to all of our listeners. And as was mentioned by Maureen, we are holding this show today a week into the Cadre Development School that's being held by the African People's Socialist Party, and that is the reason why there are people here from throughout the country that are joining us on this program today. They're actually members of the African People's Socialist Party that are here in St. Petersburg, the city of African resistance, from throughout the world, including from the Bahamas, from Sierra Leone, from the UK. Secretary General Luwesi Kinshasa, who was just on Africa Live, is here from the UK. And there are also people from throughout the US who are here for this intensive month-long training process that's being led by the African People's Socialist Party to forge and develop cadres, leaders of the African Revolution who are willing to go all the way and do whatever it takes to carry the struggle for African liberation to its conclusion of a free, liberated, and unified Africa and African people everywhere. And we in APSC are deeply honored to have a unit that exists within this process where we are also undergoing this process of becoming trained as cadres in the lead, you know, in the struggle to build the movement for white reparations to African people. And it has been a really, really profound process that has occurred at a time when the resistance of African people continues to intensify. The crisis of imperialism is deepening every single day right before our eyes, as the chairman wrote in his book, An Uneasy Equilibrium. The stench and rot of this dying social system is ever more obvious every single day that passes. And in this past week, of course, we've seen the vicious police murders of Arlen Sterling and Philando Castile by the police in Louisiana and Minneapolis. And we have also seen a new wave of protests happening, hundreds of thousands of people marching in the streets throughout the U.S., and also, you know, an act of resistance by a 25-year-old African man named Micah X. Johnson, who, using a sniper rifle, shot and killed five cops in Dallas and injured six others. So it has been quite a historic week this past week, and when all of this was popping off, and we were in the intensive, the chairman was asked by one of the participants how we could be poised to respond as a movement to the shooting in Baton Rouge. And the chairman said that the best place that we could be at that time is here at the Cadre Development School, because there is resistance everywhere in the world, but the missing ingredient is the leadership of the Revolutionary Party of the African working class. And that's what this whole process is about building. And the chairman also said that was not an isolated incident, and that by the end of the night, there would be another dead African. And there was Philando Castile, shot on camera in the car next to his girlfriend and her child in Minnesota. So this has been an incredible process, and I just wanted to also welcome, joining us in the studio is Comrade Kitty Riley from the African People's Solidarity Committee here in St. Petersburg, and the Director of the Office of Reparations and Economic Development, Uhuru Kitty.
Jesse, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you for being here. So the format for today's discussion is sort of a round table. I want to pose a question and then go around the room and hear from everyone. And, you know, everyone here has been participating in this process this past week. So I'd like to start just by, you know, sharing your experiences this past week at the Cadre Intensive. Let's start with Comrade Starr.
Uhuru, thanks, Jesse. It's been an incredible experience to come all the way from California. I drove with a couple of comrades to get here, and I'd always heard about the Cadre Intensive, and, you know, I've been working with Uhuru Solidarity Movement for a couple of years now. I had no idea what I was in for. The physical and the intellectual demands of coming to understand the realities of, you know, the two realities in America, and the need for white people like me to stand in principled solidarity with the African People's Socialist Party and to fight every moment of my life for African self-determination, to help build an independent African economy. To be a part of this has been just absolutely incredible. I'm very, very honored to be here.
Uhuru. Before we continue, I just want to remember to mention that on the previous show, Chairman Amali Shetela mentioned a march that's happening today, and it was mentioned that the march will be starting off at the Uhuru House, and the address for the Uhuru House is 1245 18th Avenue South in St. Petersburg, Florida. So if you're listening, please do everything you can to be there at the Uhuru House in Aquaba Hall, 1245 18th Avenue South, St. Petersburg, Florida. So I'd like to turn to Comrade Maureen, if you could tell us about your experiences this past week at the intensive.
Uhuru, Jesse, as Comrade Starr said, it's an absolute honor to be able to participate in this Cadre Development School of the African People's Socialist Party. And as African People's Solidarity Committee, we are members of the African People's Socialist Party because we are we are an organization of the African People's Socialist Party tasked with going out into the white community and taking on our history in relationship to African people. And it has been an incredible, intense week in terms of time and, you know, just being together and stuff, but just so filled with also with joy of mm-hmm. being able to be part of the African People's Socialist Party and to be in this intensive. And we in the white community did not face anything that so many of the Africans who are in this intensive face. Yes. And people made tremendous sacrifice to be here for the love of their people and, you know, to become part of this organization that can overturn this system. And so it has just been an honor to be part of that process, but also, you know, to work with other comrades in the Solidarity Committee in the function of a unit mm-hmm. has just been really fantastic, with people like myself who have been here for many years, but also with people who are brand new and bring so much to the work. And it's just like a relearning experience of, you know, some of the things that we want to take out into the North American community, but just really understanding that this system was built on slavery and the genocide of indigenous people. And you see that in the people who are in this intensive, who are so seriously taking this process.
Uhuru. One of the things that has stood out to me about this intensive is the participation of Yashika Clemens and her presence in this process. And Yashika Clemens is the mother of Dominique Battle, who was one of the three African teenage girls who was murdered on March 31st of this year by the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. And that has been a major, you know, overall theme of this intensive has been to promote that the campaign that the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement has been leading to force the sheriff of Pinellas County, Bob Gualtieri, or Killer Bob, as he's known, to resign, to get reparations for the families of the three victims, for criminal charges to be brought against those deputies that killed those three girls, and for Black community control of the police. And no one has spoken out more forcefully and passionately than Yashika Clemens herself in this process, you know, throughout this campaign. So that's been really, really powerful too, for me as well. So, Uhuru, Comrade Jackson.
Uhuru, it has been. I unite with how amazing it's been to hear Yashika speak, to meet her, to see her in action, to see her being so brave and so strong after this tremendous loss. But that is what's driving her, but not, because she's, of course, fighting for justice for her daughter, and she often says daughters, mm-hmm. because Dominique's friends, Linaya and Ashanti, were also extremely close with Yashika and would spend the night. The fridge and the house was always open to them, and so Yashika often refers to them to her daughters. But she is not just fighting for her daughter and her daughter's friends. She is fighting for herself, her surviving children, and all Africans everywhere for liberation. And she is such a hero, as the chairman has said. People keep saying how the cops, the police, are the heroes in our community, and we should support them. But as the chairman said, Yashika and people like Yashika are the real heroes.
Uhuru. Comrade Kitty.
Uhuru, thank you. Well, I think I have these thoughts, and I think maybe everybody does. We sit there and think, how did I ever get here? How was I ever, what happened? How did I, you know, ever have the honor of being right here in this place, in this time? I mean, we just had a week of the leadership of Chairman Amalia Shetela for a whole week, every day, not only making incredible presentations, since the theme of the first week was African internationalism,
right,
which was really profound. And, you know, but then the chairman deepening every question, and Luwazi Kinshasa, Secretary General of the ASI from Congo, mm-hmm. who resides in London and is traveling all over Europe, like the chairman said, out of a suitcase. I mean, just going and going and going and turning the burning spear into French, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to distribute, because of French colonialism. So many Africans on the continent of Europe from Africa speak French, you know, so it's in French and English. And Secretary General Gaida Cambone and Deputy Chair Onizene Shetela and our APSC Chairwoman Penny Hess. I mean, just to be, you know, in the, and all the young, new, emerging leaders that are coming out of the experiences of their own generation, like the chairman said, you know, every Africans in their 30s have gone two generations without ever seeing an example of the Black Liberation Movement. So they are like two generations later. You can't keep it down with all the deep counterinsurgency, prisons, torture, you know, imprisoning children, the boot camps, everything that they have thrown at African people, early deaths, the horrible healthcare that kills you, you know. And here they are. And we have people like you're mentioning, Yashika Clemens, that rises out of the people, mm-hmm. out of the class, heroic, like Fannie Lou Hamer or Desi X Woods, I mean, a fighter in all that pain. She is not going to be bought out by these lawyers,
yes,
these opportunist lawyers, by being promised some settlement. She said, keep your money. You took my daughters. You took my children. You took the daughter I birthed. We're coming after you, Sheriff's Department and yes, Sheriff Bob Gaultier. I mean, that kind of courage.
Yep.
It, you know, the whole question of African internationalism is, for us in the white community, is a profound theory because it sees the world as the world actually is and applies science the way one knows a plant gets pollinated by the bee and it goes over there and it drops a seed and a new plant grows. You know, botanists are really scientific about those laws of nature, you know. But applying science to society, and that's really, really important to us in the white community because we're raised with individualism,
mm-hmm,
under capitalism. We're raised with idealism, you know, with this whole religious thing that obscures reality, that always says nothing can change, nothing is knowable, mm-hmm, nothing can be known, nothing can be changed. Where the oppressed, the colonized, say all things are knowable, therefore all things can be changed, and we are about changing them. We're about changing the world.
Uh-huh.
And you get rid of all this old stuff that keeps you just sort of wedded to the way things are in opportunism, selling out the oppressed peoples, or just denial, that petty thing, you know, of denial. So that has been unbelievable because ultimately it isn't so much information.
Right.
It's the unity. Has the experience deepened our unity? I, for one, can say it has.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Deepened my unity. It yeah, makes you understand, you know, there's no going back. We are going to stand with African working class people in profound and deep solidarity and in reparations, stance of reparations. We're going to go the whole way. We're going to stand by Ushika with the African Peace Socialist Party the whole route.
Uh-huh. In line with what you were just saying, Kitty, the chairman often talks about how African internationalism is not just a theory that explains the world, but a theory that is designed to change the world. And that is a theory of practice. And a lot of what has been happening this past week has been political education on the theory of African internationalism led by the chairman in most cases, and in some cases led by Secretary General Luizi Kinshasa. And those studies have just been, I mean, immense, you know, political education packed into 1 week. So let's talk a little bit about the studies that we've had the opportunity to be a part of this past week. Uhuru. Jackson.
Uhuru. We do have different themes for each week, and we really go into depth, and it confirms the deep-found convictions we have. It makes a stronger cadre, which is what this whole intensive is about, to be able to, in the nitty-gritty details, thoroughly understand the world and how it can and needs to be changed so that we can take that unshakable knowledge out to the masses and we can become leaders in our communities in order to build the African Revolution and for it to be national and international. And we want it in every city, in every town, throughout the world, because that's what needs to happen. We, as has been discussed, we had Luizi speak to us about what's going on in the Congo and Angola and in other countries that we don't learn about very much at all in the United States. Our education system is designed to keep us ignorant in many ways. And so even for those who go searching for that knowledge, there is often not very much, at least immediately available. It's difficult to find. And he made not only the statistics come alive, but really went into what life is like for the people, and how necessary this African unification and liberation truly is, how it is so important for all Africans everywhere and all people everywhere to unite under this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Comrade Starr, what, I know all of the studies were incredible, but is there one that really stands out to you at this point, a week into the intensive?
Definitely the focus that has been on the international nature of this movement and the call for reunifying Africans all over the world, and the issue of the state, and really, and you know, how this is a fight against colonialism and not against racism. And that, you know, the reach of colonialism and parasitic capitalism and imperialism, every corner of the planet has been touched by colonial terror. We're seeing that domestically. We're seeing that in the U.S. now. And, you know, it's for 600 years now, as the chairman puts it, 600 years is long enough to have the boot of colonialism on Africans' neck. And we have an essential role to play in that. And like what Comrade Kitty said about, you know, there's a science to this. I've been to, as a college professor, I've been to numerous conferences where we go and take notes. We go home with a notebook full of notes and our heads filled up with ideas, and nothing changes. We maybe see the world differently, and that gives us the impression that you know, just by changing our ideas, the world will somehow change. And that's the hocus pocus. That's not reality. North Americans need to return the material resources that we've stolen and that we've relied upon for our comfort, for our benefit, you know, throughout our lives. And the science of African internationalism provides every single tool necessary to do that. Uhuru.
If I may add, not only have we benefited from what has been stolen, but we are still benefiting from what is being stolen. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Uhuru.
Maureen, anything you would add to this?
Uhuru. Yeah, as Kitty said, we're in the presence of, you know, great leaders, Chairman Amalia Shatila, and, you know, Secretary General of the African Socialist International, Louise Kinshasa, and other people that Kitty mentioned as well from the Central Committee of the African People's Socialist Party. And it should not be taken lightly in any sense of the word. It's mm-hmm. not just like going to a classroom to learn yes. something. And as, you know, Star was saying, it's to take it back out into our communities. And the thing about this theory is that it was developed by Chairman Amalia Shatila to solve the problem of African working class people. It's the theory of African working class people. So there was a study on African internationalism, which is this theory, but also a study on neocolonialism, so that, you know, we understand it's not just about being in solidarity with black people in general. It's about being under the leadership of the African working class.
Yes.
And taking on the whole question of colonialism and parasitism, and to be able, and with the science of African internationalism and with dialectical and historical materialism that the chairman led, understanding that to change the world, you have to analyze it from the viewpoint of the African working class, because it was African people, labor, resources, everything, genius that built the society that we live in. And just one note that stuck out to me from the chairman's presentation on African internationalism and on dialectical and historical materialism is just think, imagine the loss of human development in yes. the world because of the onslaught of Africa. Because history is told to us from the viewpoint of Europeans, and everything that's European, whether it's technology or culture or whatever, is what's valued. But Africa had huge societies and science and everything, and African people and indigenous people have just been written out of history, have life expectancies of 40 years, you know, or less. And we benefited from all of it. So we have to go back out into the white community, take on the question of reparations, understanding that if we want to change the world, it has to be under the leadership and in an organization of the African People's Solidarity Committee, which is part of the African People's Socialist Party.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. Yeah, I just want to unite with Comrade Maureen that on that one point that the chairman made during one of the studies that he was talking about. The chairman was talking about this concept that's, you know, this perception that's often promoted not only by those who are openly in favor of capitalism, but even by those white left forces, you know, Marxists and communists and so forth, that say that capitalism represented a rapid development of productive forces on this planet, and that even though capitalism is bad and things like that, that it resulted in a lot of progress. And now that that's happened, you know, then now socialism needs to be achieved somehow. And the chairman says that the chairman really deepened that whole question by saying what you were just talking about, Maureen, that it's not simply the fact that capitalism resulted in progress and productivity at the expense of African people. That's not even getting to the heart of the question. The heart of the question is that capitalism represented a major disruption of human progress and the ability for human beings to produce, that hundreds of millions of human beings were taken out of the process of production just on the ships from Africa to Europe alone. And think of what kind of progress could have and will be achieved when all African people are in control of their own wealth and their own resources and their knowledge and brilliance, you know, and talent and scientific genius. You know, how far humanity will go when that happens, which capitalism has been the worst thing that has ever happened to human progress. And what white people have experienced at the expense of African people can hardly be called progress. It's more accurately parasitism. Mm-hmm. Kitty.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Really appreciate that. One of the things that we did, you know, we're summing up, was we studied about dialectical and historical materialism, a way of viewing the world that comes from the oppressed. And what you're saying is really true. Neither the productive forces of Africans, neither the Africans nor the land, what is produced on the land, nor the labor of Africans has ever benefited African people themselves. So it's been 600 years of absolute parasitic exploitation, extraction, to build our life, white people all over the world, to build and maintain our life. But dialectical and historical materialism, it's like the yin-yang symbol or the bicycle pedals. One goes down, one goes up, and you create motion, pushing one down, the other one's up. As one is coming up, the other's going down. It is actually interrelated. It's interrelated. So that makes us really know and understand that what's going to change the reality is the oppressed rising up and taking back what has historically been parasitically grabbed. The parasite, the big bloated parasite, needs to extract. And every time they cut the tentacle off, rising national liberation struggles, rising resistance, the parasite's getting weaker and weaker and weaker, and they're frantic. And that's what we have right now, boy. We have frantic. You know, and white people, we participate through reparations and also cutting off the tentacles. Everything, the resources we raise through reparations, the stands that we take in the world, you know, that also cuts the tentacle. It attacks the parasite that's getting weaker and weaker. And we know they're frantic. We even saw that when we were on outreach, how people who see their future with this system are completely, you know, in a tither. So, you know, that's like a really powerful process of gaining the science of African internationalism, having that confidence to know that, as the chairman said, the acorn, the seed, is actually the thing that's growing up, not the huge tree that's on its way of falling over and crashing. And that's the African working class. One of the things we also learned, what people mentioned, was about neocolonialism. That was really deepened for me, the new face of colonialism, when white people couldn't white imperialists couldn't show their face anymore because the people were demanding independence. So they still controlled all the resources of Africa, but they put a black head of state up. So that was still white power in blackface, as the chairman says.
Yeah.
So the economy is controlled by France, England, the U.S. It's pouring into the U.S. China's in there reaping, you know, taking out resources, et cetera. But the white left and white liberals in this country have upheld neocolonialism more than anyone. That's why they just were just overjoyed Obama was running for the presidency of the worst imperialist country in the world. What would make him progressive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is imperialism he's dying to lead and get wealthy off of. And completely propped up by white liberals. And they do that in their communities. They do that in their schools. They hide behind reactionary feminism by saying, well, this is a black feminist.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I follow her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff. It's really reactionary. It's a reactionary politic. And chairman named, you know, Patrice Lumumba, who was one of the greatest giants of a African revolutionary, courageous man, that was killed brutally by the CIA and neocolonial sellouts in the United States, completely orchestrating this. And but the chairman said, Patrice Lumumba and the great heroic Kwame Nkrumah, they didn't have, of Ghana, did not have a revolutionary party of the African working class.
Yes.
And without the revolutionary party of the African working class, they were vulnerable, completely vulnerable. There were no cadre, there was no organization. You know, they came out of the PB, but they were African champions, you know, revolutionary Africans for the African peasants and workers. But without, but the African People's Socialist Party is it. This is it. People have to see that. It's gone way beyond anything that's happened before. Malcolm X didn't have a party of the African working class.
Correct.
But the African People's Socialist Party is that party. This tendency of self-determination for African people and national liberation and all the resources of Africa belong to African people everywhere, starting from Garvey. Garvey didn't have a revolutionary party of the African working class.
Mm-hmm.
The African People's Socialist Party is the revolutionary party of the African working class. So if we want to see a resolution as white people to any contradiction that we have that comes from being alienated in this system or injustice that we experience in this system, it's not going to be gotten by a single issue, mobilizing around a single issue that might resolve something for me. It is only going to be gotten with the African revolution. Anti-colonial, the colonialism must go, colonialism. Must go. That's the source of all the oppression.
Yes.
And that's why we call ourselves revolutionaries, because we unite under the leadership of the African working class, the African People's Socialist Party. That's the only way we can do it. Otherwise, you're just complaining, and you're just trying to find a solution within it.
Yes.
That never, ever deals with the fact that Native Americans are dying by age 44 in the United States, living on what the chairman calls reservations, living on concentration camps that people call reservations.
Right.
It doesn't solve what they're doing, ICE, these SWAT teams that attack little Mexican children going from school and separate families and kill them trying to come over for their resources, crossing that fake border. I mean, it doesn't solve, you know, the fact that African women that are incarcerated at 825% more in the past 5 years. It's increased from private prisons. This is an economy. It is never going to touch that unless we get to the root of it, and that's colonialism. That means shedding our whiteness, getting rid of our whiteness, committing national suicide, and uniting with the oppressed people of the world, starting right here in the belly of the beast with black working class people.
Uhuru, Kitty. When you mentioned the phrase national suicide, and you know the chairman has talked about this a lot in this past week, that you know, the responsibility of white people to turn our backs on white power and imperialism and abandon the interests of this, the white nationalist, you know, system of colonialism and parasitic capitalism through reparations, through solidarity with African people struggling for their liberation and self-determination. And that is contrasted to what we often see coming from white people, white anti-racists, or white people who want to try to escape being white, you know, by wearing dreadlocks or, you know, whatever, you know, many other different ways that white people try to adopt African culture and things like that. And national suicide, you know, is not a call for us to pretend we're not white. It's a call for us to take responsibility for the fact of what it means to be white, that we benefit. To be white is to benefit from the oppression of African people. Historically, to be white is to oppress African people. And that, you know, national suicide, what it looks like is what we've been doing this past week, going out into the white community, you know, raising resources, selling the Burning Spear newspaper, spreading African internationalism in the white oppressor nation community. And before opening up this question about, you know, I wanted to talk about what that's been like getting out there committing national suicide, you know, with door-to-door drops, outreach tables, and things like that. I wanted to just throw this into the mix, something I just heard about earlier today. Hillary Clinton, perhaps you may have heard about this, made a speech recently to white people. She made a call to white people, which is very interesting. She said, "I will call for white people like myself to put ourselves in the shoes of those African-American families who fear every time their children go somewhere, who have to talk about how to protect themselves when they are the ones who should be expecting protection from encounters with the police. I'm going to be talking to white people. I think we are the ones who have to start listening to the legitimate cries that are coming from our fellow African-American citizens. We have so much more to be done. We can't be engaged in hateful rhetoric or incitements of violence. We need to bring people together." And this was a day after the resistance in Dallas saw five cops shot by Micah X. Johnson. And I just wanted to introduce that into the discussion because Hillary Clinton, of course, is one of the most towering examples of imperialism and white power that you can find. And she and her husband, Bill Clinton, in many ways are some of the most you know, obvious tyrants and villains of the African community in this country, that with the omnibus crime bill, with mass incarceration, with the, you know, increasing the police presence. I mean, the killings of those two Africans this past week are in many ways consequences of policies that were, you know, mm-hmm. intensified by Bill and Hillary Clinton. But I think it's really interesting that she even has to say that she even has to say mm-hmm. white people. And we see a lot of that out there. We even saw an organization talking about door knocking for reparations, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know. I just wanted to throw that into the mix, you know, in terms of what's out there right now politically and why it's so important for white people to be under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party and what that means concretely versus everything else that we see out there, whether it's campaigning for Hillary, which means campaigning for white power, or Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, or, you know, unlearning racism workshops. We have not been doing any of that this past week. We've been out in the community organizing in two different precincts in St. Pete and getting petitions signed and raising resources. And I think the responses have been really great. And so I especially wanted to hear, I mean, we can hear from everyone on this topic, but I especially wanted to hear from the comrades who are here from San Diego. Start with Jackson. I want to just, you know, put forward Comrade Jackson as well for doing an excellent job on outreach, signing up a lot of people. Even just during drops where signups are not really what we expect to happen, Jackson will put a flyer on the door and somebody will open the door and say, "Oh, what's going on here?" And that person will end up signing up. So what's been happening in those interactions that you've been having out there, Jackson?
Thank you. What's been happening is, I guess, white people are seeing what's going on, and a lot of them don't know what to do about it, what they can do. They've been making their hashtags, and they've been talking to their friends about their feelings, and they're just at a loss as to what to do because there is no other organization out there like Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And when they hear about who we are and what we do, they want more information and they want to sign up. They're often a little hesitant, I think, because to them it might sound too good to be true. They want to do a little more research and all that stuff. And we, of course, completely welcome that. And we've been selling a lot of Burning Spear newspapers because people want more information. And even if they end up not uniting, you know, it shows that they want to hear from multiple sources because they aren't getting the real facts from most places, if anywhere else. And it's really interesting with this quote from Hillary Clinton just now, because it shows that, it really shows that imperialism is in crisis, and this desperate call to band together before the nation is overwhelmed by resistance, you know. And okay, now let's start being nice, or now let's start having these reforms in order to just keep everything tight together, so that doesn't fall apart. But then, you know, what happens if we're defeated? And, you know, will those reforms still be in place? I don't think so, because we've seen reforms come and go, and things that are quote unquote given be taken away. It just shows what we've been saying about white people being in a panic, white nationalists, I should say, while white people who are really seeing what's going on, they want to take action. They just don't know how. And then when we give the information as to how they can take action, they sign up, and they've been, we've received a lot of new members, a lot of signups for intermission. Sorry, I'm from a theater background. For information, and they want to know, they want to take action. We're having a march today, and we expect a lot of people to be there. A lot of people said they would come. We're really excited when we were handing out the flyers about it. They wanted to talk about it, so we're expecting quite the turnout today.
Uhuru, this is Star. I unite with what Jackson has said. It's been amazing to get out into the neighborhoods here. We went to a local neighborhood, I want to say Kenwood. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about drops, we're talking about just sort of hurrying through a neighborhood and leaving flyers, and then following up, going back the next day and tapping on doors and saying, did you see the flyer that we left? Are you familiar with the case of the three drowned African girls? And I've been really pleasantly surprised by folks' willingness to come out into this godforsaken heat and you know, and talk with us, and have been really receptive. And what Jackson said about folks not having an avenue, mm-hmm. You know, there's plenty, like, you can sit on Facebook all day long and comment and like this and hashtag that, and it's not going to change the material conditions that keep this city so separated. You know, we're from San Diego, and the segregation is somehow a little less obvious. The stark contrast between, is it Beach Boulevard or something?
Beach Drive.
Beach Drive. My God.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, you see colonialism here. If people want to say, oh, that's past history. You know, I didn't own slaves, I'm not responsible, et cetera, et cetera. Folks are finally making the connections, and that's what the African People's Socialist Party does through African internationalism. It allows us to make the connections that when I drive home from work and I park my car and leave it unlocked and one, you know, saunter into the house, I didn't fear that whole drive home to see red and blue lights in my rearview mirror, and worry that I, you know, that my family would be planning my funeral because of a broken taillight, or because of selling CDs, you know, hustling just to get by, selling, cigarettes. Yeah, like in the case of Eric Garner. I mean, you know, at some point, North Americans are going to realize that every argument they've provided for the death of this African and that African and this African and another African and every 24 or 26 hours an African being slain by the state, by police that are the armed representatives of the colonial state, we've run out of rationale. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, it seems like, you know, finally people are saying, okay, darn it, there's a pattern here. This is genocide. And there's a petition, AfricanStartsGenocide.org. Please get online and sign it. There's a petition that looks at how this condition meets every condition that the UN set out for the definition of genocide. Mm-hmm. I mean, their news came out last night that the Bahamian government, the government in the Bahamas, is warning their citizens who travel here to the U.S. to exercise extreme caution while traveling through the U.S. because of police terror. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so tapping on people's doors, it's like they wanted to say, oh, well, you know, about the case of the three girls. I mean, what a tragedy. What a tragedy. And so much deception around the media's presentation of the case and the Pinellas County Sheriff's slander of the girls and the mistreatment of Yashika Clemens, Dominique's mom. You know, even just the way they told her that her child had died.
Yeah.
We're out of arguments, comrades. You know, North Americans, it's time to quit defending the colonial state and to get on the right side of history, to join Uhuru Solidarity Movement, to join us in working for reparations, to return the material resources. It might make you feel good to go out and march with a sign that says Black Lives Matter, or, you know, let's all link pinkies and form a love circle. But it's time to get into action. Come to the march today at 2, starting from the Uhuru House at
1245 18th Avenue South.
March with us today. Come to the Sunday rally. They're every Sunday afternoon at 4. Those are open to the public. Let's get into action and change the world together. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Kitty, what came to your mind when you heard Hillary Clinton's call to the white community?
Well, we're on the air. So I can't fully express it.
Yes.
But I will say that the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation is foul.
Yes.
Absolutely
is.
Foul. And they, Bill Clinton, along with George Bush, even though they're supposed to be enemies, one was a Republican ex-president, one a Democratic ex-president, came together after $3 billion was raised for the people of Haiti following the earthquake. People, you know, you bet Africans gave to Haiti. Mm-hmm. Everything they could give was over $3 billion. Mm. They confiscated it. They confiscated it, and it's in the Clinton Foundation, and this is years later. When was the earthquake? 5 years ago? People for years were dying of dysentery. They are still living in tents. There was no infrastructure in any of the buildings to begin with. The U.S. had already taken away the ability of the Haitian people to grow their own rice. They're a completely dependent economy. You remember when they were eating the mud pies. That was like all over the news a few years ago. And people were actually making them and eating them. The heroic people of Haiti that had the first successful revolution in the world of African people against the French colonialism, and have paid dearly since then. But they kept the money, and they still have the money, and they wheel and deal what they want. They've got hotels they're building. You know, I mean, they're using Haiti for their own gains and their own means. And then the Clintons are in Africa. They're directly involved in the exploitation, extraction of coltan out of Congo, even if from another country.
Right.
And, you know, which is in every computer, every cell phone, all kinds of technology. So, I mean, they're vicious and foul. And Africans aren't African Americans, and they're not her fellow Americans. They are African nation of people that are colonized and that are going to see your demise for their freedom.
Uh-huh.
And she might not know that's coming. But she's appealing to me, to the Bernie Sanders voters.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, we want the Bernie Sanders voters. Mm-hmm. We want to win those who would have, because it's so temporary. How can this white guy talk about socialism? How can white people talk about socialism? It's one world economy, a parasitic world economy. The wealth that we see here and that absolute abject impoverishment we see in Africa, that's the same capitalism. That's the same economy. You extract it there to such a severe degree, and you've got excess wealth here and a standard of living that tops anything, you know?
Yes.
It's one world economy. So having Bernie Sanders speak of socialism is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. If you want to see a world of real peace and real solidarity and camaraderie and the way we could hold our heads up with the peoples of the world, you know, you've got to get behind the African Revolution. That is the only thing. So... Mm-hmm. You know, I another thing I was really struck by, we watched the movie about Mississippi Freedom Summer.
Yeah.
Which people go on YouTube.
Freedom on My Mind.
Freedom on My Mind. And when they pulled the car out of the mud and the pond, that was Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, three of the SNCC organizers, volunteers that went to Mississippi in 64. Even though they had already been dead, they just did that to hide the car. I couldn't help but think of them pulling that car out with the three girls. I mean, it was like, this is 2016 in the deep South. Florida is not just where you go on your honeymoon or to Disneyland. Florida is the deep South. As someone said, driving here, I didn't see one Confederate flag until I crossed into Florida. Not through Georgia. You know, I mean, this is the deep South. And that's sort of what Star was talking about. Like, it's glaring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Kitty, and everyone for this discussion. We have about 10 minutes left, and for anyone who's just tuning in, you're listening to Reparations in Action, the program of the African People's Solidarity Committee here on uhururadio.com. And Comrade Maureen, you are here from Oakland, and you're the director of Uhuru Foods and Pies, part of Black Star Industries under the leadership of Deputy Chair Ona Zene Yeshitela. You're here not just to experience what's happening here, but to be able to go back to where you are and bring what you learn here to the work that you're involved in Oakland. How do you see this intensive impacting upon the work that you lead and that you participate in the city that you're in?
Uhuru, right, I'm not just here as an individual. I'm here as a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee, of a unit that exists in Oakland, California, and as you said, under the leadership of Deputy Chair Ona Zene Yeshitela, who's so incredibly leads all the economic work of the African People's Socialist Party, all these incredible institutions that have been built, like Uhuru Foods and Pies. Some of the ways I see taking it back in particular is I know that we are in a process of developing, under Deputy Chair's leadership, under the Office of ORED, which is Office of Reparations and Economic Development, a campaign that has a title, Africans 1 Billion Strong, and it's going to take out the whole question of reparations. So that's going to be developed. There's going to be a prison conference, a conference on the prison economy in February of 2017. I can't believe the years. Mm-hmm. That's tied to the development of the economic institutions of the African People's Socialist Party. So we have to hit the ground running, tying that campaign together with how much wealth has been built off of the enslavement and imprisonment of African people. And prison slavery was kept legal in the U.S. when it was supposedly shut down, but in prison, slavery is legal. And mm-hmm. so we have to take this out and say that in California, where I live, has the fourth largest prison economy in the world. If you cut California out of the United States, make it its own country, fourth largest. It's a huge, huge economy. Cities were built around prisons for white people to have jobs. So that's one thing. We have to take that out and really tie it to the whole question of building Black Star Industries, which is taking away dollars from the parasitic economy. And as white people, that's what it means to raise reparations. It's not about supporting any given organization. It's about challenging the system. Mm-hmm. And to do that, it has to be, you know, to build Black Star Industries, which is a revolutionary economy under the leadership of the African working class, African People's Socialist Party. So I'm very excited about, you know, really being able to move forward and really push that campaign out. And some of the work that you were talking to the comrades from San Diego about, the selling of the Burning Spear newspaper,
yes,
getting out into the white community. We have been very, very lax on that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it's part of the standards of life of the African People's Socialist Party.
Yeah.
And the chairman O'Malley Yeshitela, built the spear in 1968 and has fought for it every single day
yeah.
since. And because it takes out this theory, it's an empowering tool for the African working class and for anybody that wants to unite with it. And I just wanted to comment that the unit that we have here, all the units have a name, ours is Che Guevara.
Yeah.
And I believe it's because Che Guevara made a statement that it's not just about well-wishing, but it's about sharing the same fate, whether in life or death, victory or
uh-huh.
death. And so uh-huh. that's the side that white people have to be on. It's not just some charity thing or whatever. It's like, do we want to be part of a new world? Join it. Join it. Join it. Take your chances. Be on the side of the African working class.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
I really unite with what you just said, Maureen, and we were actually just discussing that this morning in a meeting of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, that the significance of selling the Burning Spear newspaper. And, you know, revolutions are not made behind a computer screen or on the phone. And the chairman has really been struggling for that, and it's intensive that, you know, we have to be out there with the Burning Spear newspaper. It's the basic work of every member of this movement is to be out there with the Burning Spear. And, you know, it's the solution to every problem. It's, you know, if you're the only person in your city, go out and sell the spear. Soon you'll be not the only person in your city. You have too much work and not enough people to do it, go out and sell the spear. It's the answer to every problem is in the masses, in the people, and the spear is the absolute best organizing tool to make that happen. So So we have about 4 minutes here, but I want to direct the same question to the comrades who are here from San Diego, who are in APSC or coming into APSC and are tasked with building our mass front in the form of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement out in San Diego. How do you see this intensive reverberating in the work that will be happening once you get back to San Diego?
Well, this is Star. This feels like the work we've been doing in San Diego on steroids. It feels like we've done more work in the last 4 days here to organize people and have gotten more contacts here in the so-called Deep South, where it was us who saw the Confederate flag. We drove from California all the way through Texas, all the way through Louisiana, Georgia, and yeah, the first Confederate flag was here in Florida, and St. Pete is referred to as the headquarters of the African Revolution, mm-hmm. but there's Africans all over the world, and there's North Americans, all over the world, and we're going to take this fight back to San Diego. We've been doing outreach, lacking some, political unity, like going out and selling the spear, yes, 5 here, 10 there. And being here, we realize how much more is possible, how we can grow the Uhuru Solidarity Movement throughout San Diego, bring in dozens, hundreds, thousands of people. And, it's on. With what's been going on in the world and the African resistance, there's absolutely no excuse for any North American not to join this movement. So I'm really excited to bring what we're learning here back to San Diego. And Jackson, who's here, is the West Coast regional representative. We're actually breaking the nation up into regions now because, that's the vision that we have. Yes, we're having events in every town, and I'm really excited about the Days in Solidarity with African People coming up in October. And we're bringing the chairman, Omalia Shatella, and Chairwoman Penny Hess of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and Yashika Clemens, Dominique Battle's mother, who is such a hero in the fight for African liberation and self-determination. We're bringing them on speaking tours around the country. It's what we do for it's the main focus of our work annually to raise the reparations pledge that we've made to the party. And it's us walking our talk, and I really see the whole movement taking off. We've been getting so much interest online. Today, we're taking the fight out into the community with the march that starts at 2 here from the Uhuru House in just a little while. So I'm excited. We are winning. All things are possible under the leadership of the African working class. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Kitty.
Uhuru.
We have 1 minute.
1 minute. Go to APSP Uhuru, uhuru.org/donate. Make a donation today to reparations. Make a donation to the work of the African People's Socialist Party and Black Star Industries. APSP Uhuru, uhuru.org.
Uhuru. Well, I want to thank everyone who was on the show today. I think this was an excellent discussion and report back to our listeners on the work of the Party Cadre Intensive from the APSC unit. Thank you to our engineer, Eric, and to all of our listeners on uhururadio.com. You've been listening to Reparations in Action.
Cadre.
Work.
Cadre.
Study.